Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Michael, today we have professional storyteller Linda Schuyler Ford, who is performing in South Florida next week.
This is a Hudson Valley folktale called The Terrible Ogress of Claverack. Claverack is a small hamlet just outside the town of Hudson, which sits on the banks of the river. It is a little known fact, and those who know it rarely speak of it. But once, a terrible ogress lived in Claverack. She was not terrible because of her appearance. In fact, she had taken on the appearance of a beautiful, young, human woman. Rather, she was terrible for the task that she had set before herself. The ogress hated men, and she vowed she would not rest until she had devoured every last one of them from the face of the earth. And as she had to start somewhere, she began in Claverack. It was about 1775 when she arrived, but a small plot of land on the outskirts of town on the road leading out to Hudson. She hired four young men to build her house, and they did their best work for this beautiful woman. When no time at all, a cottage of stone and timber was completed. The ogress thanked the young men profusely, paid them their wages, and then she ate them. It was just a few days later that the farmer Casper's Coin was riding his wagon out of town to Hudson to pick up supplies. Strangely, his wagon hit a huge stone in the middle of the road in front of the ogress's house. His wheel went off, the carriage went flashing down, and he flew to the side of the road. The ogress sprang to the window and called out, "Kind sir, what a terrible thing to happen. Alas, you cannot accomplish this repair by yourself, but go behind my house. My husband is there hoeing." And so he did, but was perplexed to see neither garden nor husband. The ogress relieved him of his confusion swiftly by eating him. And so it went. Every few days, another man disappeared. It was Brom Bear who observed after several weeks that men were in fact disappearing, and they seemed to be disappearing in the vicinity of the house of that beautiful young woman new to town. And so, as night fell, he disguised himself in the garb of a traveler. He mounted his horse, and instead of riding on the road out of town, he rode through the woods behind the ogress's house, where he tied up his horse, and then circled back as if he had journeyed long on foot from Hudson toward Claverack. The ogress was sitting on her steps as he passed by and called out, "Sir, where are you heading on this evening? It is nightfall and not safe for one to be traveling on foot alone." "Oh, indeed, that is true," he responded. "I seem to have gotten lost, turned around. I know not. I thought I was heading to Hudson." "Oh, Hudson," the woman exclaimed. "Hudson is a day's walk in the other direction. May I offer you lodging? I am but a poor widow, and occasionally I'm able to provide lodging and a meal in exchange for some few coins that will help tide me over. Indeed, it would be a boon to my dead husband's soul if you would spend the night in his bed in his room." "Well, I cannot refuse such an offer," replied Brown Bear. and he allowed himself to be led up a narrow stairs and into a cozy bedchamber. When he was alone, he took off his coat and laid that out on the bed where his body would be. He also plumped up the pillow and put that there, pulled up the covers and put his hat where the pillow would be. And then he quietly opened the window to his room and climbed down the apple tree that existed outside. He walked to the edge of the woods, crouched down, and waited. The ogress also had been waiting, and as she did not hear snoring, but she did not hear stirring either, she took a chance and opened the door a crack. The moonlight fell across the body of a man who appeared much plumper in repose than when he was walking and awake. She could not steel herself any longer. This feast lay before her, and she could not wait. The ogress pounced and swallowed the man. But of course, it was not man, but coat and pillow, and she began to choke immediately on feathers, clutching her throat, coughing and sending out a spew of feathers into the air. She raced down the stairs out onto the porch in the fresh air, gasping and still sending out a billow of feathers. Brom Bear did not waste any more time. He walked through the woods quickly to his horse, rode that horse hard to Hudson, and gathered up men with torches to ride on this terrible ogress. The ogress, now able to breathe again, realized that she was in trouble and scurried down the road into the village. She knocked on one door and called out for help, but there was no answer. She went to the next house, and again there was no answer. Meantime, the men rode hard and fast into Claverack, and now she could hear the horses' hooves. She could see the lights from the torches through the trees. The men rode closer and closer as she went house to house, knocking, pounding, begging for help, but there was no answer. And now the men were there, approaching the village. She could see the horses. She could see the lights. She could see the men's faces as they thundered closer and closer and closer. Desperate, the ogress stood in the village square and called out, "Is there not one man who will help me?" She was now surrounded by the men from Hudson on horseback with torches. She was surrounded by them and looked up pleadingly and called out, "Is there not one man in this whole village who will help a poor widow?" But of course, she'd eaten them all.
Linda Ford with us. With a gruesome story, Karen.
Pretty gruesome. And I don't know if she chose this specifically for the Me Too era or not, but this is the kind of story, a kind of folktale that we are not used to hearing.
Well, you have a strong female character who's going to solve the world problems by getting rid of the men. Now, that sounds like something like a Me Too situation.
Well, what's so unusual for folklore, and it's always fun to hear when the narrative is skewed a little bit from the usual expectation, is we hear right away she's terrible. We assume, because this is how folklore works, folk narrative particularly works, we assume that terrible ogress means she's going to be ugly. In fairy tales, if you're kind and good, you're beautiful. And if you're cruel and evil, you're ugly. In this story, we are reminded that not everybody who's beautiful is kind as well.
I thought of immediately when she said she was a beautiful ogress, I thought of Cameron Diaz from the movie Shrek.
And you know, I'm glad you said that, because very often those animated films that are so popular are pulling from folklore. Think how the Arabian Nights is used in Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast has been animated, and so many of these stories, even when we don't recognize the folktale right off the bat by the title, they are based on stories that have lasted for hundreds and hundreds of years. So the filmmakers know they're going to be popular. They're going to work.
And we should note also that Disney is not the originator of those folk tales.
Thank you so much for pointing that out. Absolutely.
Well, I was going along with the story, and I could understand an ogress being mad at men and all the murders she's creating, but a bear that rides a horse, she just went over the line.
Well, this is a folk tale, and unlike legends or even myths, folk tales really can have things in them. Well, myths can too, but folk tales can really have things, elements in them that are just extraordinary. There are some things that are closer to home, are more familiar, like when was the last time you ate a pillow? Don't you hate when that happens?
You figure the ogress would have caught on rather quickly that she wasn't eating a person.
Yeah, I really love that you brought that up. I think the place that most Americans first came into contact with that strange ability of people to disguise themselves, and nobody has any idea that they're an animal or that they're something else. The very first is probably Little Red Riding Hood. How could anybody think that a wolf was actually their grandmother? That's the first thing, even if it was dark. But second, I think we're all familiar with Superman and how funny it is that somebody could just put on a pair of glasses and a suit and you have no idea that this is the same Superman hero. And I think in all of these cases, disguise is a very, very important element in folk narrative. And of course, our popular narrative comes from folk narrative. And this idea that somebody can deceive another person by his identity. It's done in these stories in a visual way, which sounds laughable to us, but we all deceive people all the time.
And I have to bring up one more time, is this an old tale or an original tale?
This is a folk tale. This is her version of the story.
So is it from a woman's point of view, or is it just folk tales hating men?
Let's face it, there are many folk tales where women die. There are many folk tales where animals die. This happens to be a folk tale where men die. But I take your point. I mean, think of the story Bluebeard. Bluebeard killed wife after wife after wife. That's a very well-known folk tale. I think in the case of a story like this, we need to remember that often women were telling the folk narratives. Women were sharing the folk tales. And maybe this appealed to women who were feeling very browbeaten, women who were feeling very put upon. And so this was a story that they wanted to keep alive because it made them feel a little more powerful.
I suppose they kept it away from the men.
Well, men didn't always keep the stories of men hurting women away from the women. I think these were ways that people used to remind each other, hey, you know, you better keep in line.
She is a professional storyteller coming to town, and I noticed her technique. She had a lot of pauses.
Yes, and you know, silence is golden. I'm pausing on perfect. I know that dead air time and radio is toxic, but silence is golden. And often you can say a lot with your silences. You can build suspense. You can let people catch up to where you are. You know, let something settle in your consciousness before you hear something else, etc. So good storytellers use that a lot.
Linda Ford is performing in South Florida. Where is she going to be doing a show?
Yeah, she and John Spellman and the Latin Reggae Roots Band Bachato and yours truly, Karen Neal, will be appearing at Moonlight Tales Cabaret. It is outdoors next Friday night, February 23rd, 7 to 9:30 at the Broward County Main Library, 100 South Andrews Avenue.
Well, thanks for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a story of South Florida they'd like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send an email to me at cneile, that's C-N-E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Contact and archive stories is also available at our website at wlrn.org. Click radio and the public storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The public storyteller returns next Sunday.